It's 9 o'clock. We're going to call the meeting to order, please. If you all have, grab a seat. Good morning.
Morning.
Everybody bright and bushy.
Rain and terror begin.
Bushy tail this morning. Okay. It's 9 o'clock. We're going to have a roll call. Determine that we got a quorum, although it pretty much looks like we do. But let's do a roll call anyway.
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Handy Peters.
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Matusik.
Here.
Mayor Masarczyk.
Here.
Councilman Emter.
Here.
Commissioner Curry is excused. Vice Mayor McGurk.
Here.
Councilmember Saylor.
Here.
Mayor Kelly.
Here.
Vice Mayor DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Vice Mayor Long.
Here.
Commissioner Revels.
Here.
Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Dennis is excused. Councilmember Cusack. Councilmember Norby.
Here.
Councilmember Wagner.
Here.
Mayor Ardell.
Here.
Vice Mayor Rogers. Mayor Jennings is excused. Commissioner Shoup.
Here.
Commissioner Lane.
Here.
Mayor Gibson.
Here.
Mayor Sal.
Here.
Councilmember Perrone.
Here.
Linda Costello is excused. Clay Irvin.
Here.
Gillis Blaze.
Here.
Bob Stork.
Here.
And we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. If you all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we will move to public comment and participation. Do we have any public comment? Seeing none. I would like to, before we move into the agenda, just to acknowledge some people that are here. First of all, Norianne Downs, our FDOT secretary, thank you for coming. We're appreciative of your attendance. I also want to welcome new members. We are officially the River to Sea TPO, and we have some new membership on that TPO. Barbara Revels from, where's Barbara at? From Pellagra County. Jason DeLorio?
DeLorenzo.
And you're from Palm Coast.
Right.
And then we have John Rogers from Bunnell. Where's John at? He's not here. Okay. Welcome to our partners from Pellagra County. We really look forward to having you members of this organization, and we know that we have a long and wonderful working relationship with Pellagra anyway, and that we'll really continue with you being here. So thank you. We'll move to the consent agenda. And just one note under the Treasurer's report. The June report is the last report of the previous fiscal year, and the July report is the first report of the new fiscal year. That was confusing for anybody when you looked at it. That's
motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Thank you very much. Motion by Robert, who seconded it? Okay, Jason seconded it. Any comment? Anybody want to pull anything? Okay, all those in favor of the consent agenda, say aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. We'll move to our action items, and we're going to open the public hearing on the River to Sea TPO 2014 Transportation Priority Project List. And I'm going to turn this to Lois and ask you to give us a report.
I don't think we had anybody that wanted to speak to the priority projects list, so we'll go into discussion. And I think you all remember that the drafts, this is a process that we do each year, and it is the way in which we as a TPO communicate our priorities for the planning area to the Department of Transportation as they build their work program in the fall. And so we start this process at the beginning of the year, and folks bring applications, and we update all of the priority lists that we submit. And drafts of those lists were presented in June. We've had them out for public review. There have been a few changes, and those are in your packet, and they're signified by either a strike through or an underline for additions. And I'm going to go ahead and talk about a couple of those. And the first is on either page 6 or 34, depending on which number you're looking at, on the ITS Traffic Ops Tier B list. And it's project number 2, and you'll hear about this a little later in the agenda as well. It's a pedestrian crossing that was submitted by the town of Ponce Inlet. The town of Ponce Inlet has worked out an agreement with Volusia County to fund that project using local funds, so they are no longer in need of any federal set-aside funds, so they are withdrawing that project. That's good news. A little further along on page 9 or 37, under the Transportation Alternatives Program, or TAP program, you'll notice that project number 2 is a spring-to-spring trail, and that's been a project high up on that list for quite a number of years. But the limits of that project actually were clarified last year. The top segment, segment 3A, is from, Detroit Terrace. We've had to make sure that we were clear and consistent with the regional project list. So we've updated those project limits to Detroit Terrace to 1792. And the county has been working on trying to develop that segment. So again, we've updated those limits to clearly reflect what that priority is. Further along on page 14, or 42, on the bicycle and pedestrian priority lists, there were actually several corrections and updates to that page, and those are included in a handout that's in front of you. They weren't necessarily any significant changes. Obviously, the priorities and the projects remain the same, but they were some corrections and updates to information so that, again, we were clearly communicating to the department what our needs are. So we've added some construction costs, updated the phases that are needed, and again, those are at your spot for review. And then finally is the very last page of this particular package, which is a new list that we added this year, which is regional priorities, trail priorities, that we submit to the Central Florida Alliance. And this becomes an important list because when we developed regional lists last year through the Central Florida MPO Alliance, the DOT committed to spending their portion of TAP funds on these projects that we've prioritized. And we happen to be very successful beneficiaries of that particular effort because that helped get significant segments of the East Central Florida Rail Trail funded. So we're working through that process again this year. But we received a request from the Ocala Marion TPO director to add a project on there, which is the Black Bear Scenic Trail. And several years ago, there was a PD&E, a project development and engineering study done on State Road 40 for widening that road, and they determined that the locally preferred alternative was to not move forward with any widening. But because there is such momentum in developing regional trails, and there was all of this fresh information available for that corridor, and a change in the Ocala forest management, and the current management is much more receptive to the idea of building trails along the portions of State Road 40 that go through the Ocala National Forest, that the TPO wanted to go back and take that PD&E work and use it to develop a trails PD&E, which is required when you go through any sort of national or public lands. So they asked for our support in their request to DOT for developing this, and so we've added this. There's no cost to this TPO for doing that, but it certainly gives support to them. And that project will extend all the way into Volusia County up to 1792, where it'll meet other trails that we are currently working on. So those are the changes on the priority list. If there are any questions, I certainly am happy to answer them. If not, we'd look for your approval to
are there any,
those lists. As
any questions for staff on this list? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Okay, moved by Councilmember Patterson, seconded by Commissioner Gillian from Daytona Beach. I'm sorry.
I forgot. I had to put my card up.
Mayor Kelly?
I forgot. I just want to point this out that on all of the funds on those pages 42 when I look down through there and see the 10% match or the 10%, it just really disturbs me again. I'll keep making this plea that we could do a lot more if people were committed to put more. Some skin in the game. There may be even a project that Orma Beach has on there that if we had to put 50%, we might not view it that highly. So I think there's others the same way. So just think how much more we could do if each community that was receiving funds had more skin, then all of us could have more funding in the projects that we truly need. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Item B, review and approval of resolution 2014-2027, amending the 2014-15 and 2015-16 Unified Planning Work Program. This action supports a request from VOTRAN to amend the UPWP to account for the Federal Transit Administration funding it will receive. It develops transit development plan and transportation disadvantaged service plan, and two, it develops a comprehensive operational assessment. This amendment adds a new task, 5.03 transit planning services, and I don't know, Lois, whether you want to talk about that new task, or is there anything that you want to...
No, again, this has just been added to reflect that there's planning activity going on in this area. These are not TPO funds, but rather funds that are going directly to VOTRAN to complete those particular elements, but it does at least reflect that that activity is going to be occurring. So
okay.
We're supporting VOTRAN.
Are there any questions on that item? Now, do I need to formally open a public hearing on this one?
No.
No, okay. Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Moved by Patterson, seconded by Mr. Emter from Edgewater. I see no questions. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Item C, review and approval of resolution 2014-28, supporting Flagler County becoming a designated recipient for FTA funding within the Palm Coast, Daytona Beach, Port Orange urbanized area. There are currently, as we know, two transit agencies providing services within this expanded planning area. Flagler County has a public transportation system as well as Flagler County with VOTRAN. The resolution provides support for Flagler County Public Transportation to be established as a designated recipient, allowing the agency to directly access FTA funding for the portion of the services area provided by their service. And I'm assuming this is a result of the newly designated River to Sea TPO and the boundary changes.
That's correct. And again, items C and D are related. One makes it clear that VOTRAN is going to continue to be the designated recipient for service provided in their service area, and this is adding Flagler County Public Transit to make sure that it's clear that we support them being designated to directly receive funds for the service that they provide in their service area.
Okay.
Move
approval by Mayor Masarsic.
Second.
Seconded by Mayor Kelly. Any questions on this item? Ms. Revels, is there anything you'd like to say about this, Commissioner?
No, it's a great move.
Okay, great. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Moving along to item D, as you just heard, this is a related item, so I will entertain a motion. Move approval by Mayor Masarsic, seconded by, I think, Robert Gilliland. I think, Bob, Rob, you seconded. Okay. Any questions? I see no tents up. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Now we'll move along to item E, review and approval of federal functional classification map. And this is done every 10 years following the census. The classification determines eligibility for funding under federal aid highway and transit programs and potentially has an impact on level of service on the road. In January 2014, with a recommendation from the TCC, the River to Sea TPO Board approved an urbanized area boundary map and table to be submitted to FDOT and Federal Highway. In May 2014, the TPO received an email response to the submittal. In most instances, the information and comments were clearly understood. There were a few that needed to be classified, and there was a question regarding the classification of Saxon Boulevard. Would you, Ms. Bollenbach, speak to that item for us, please, so it's
Yeah, clear? And my apologies. This is a more technical item. But as Chair Northey mentioned, we go through and we adjust these boundaries and the classifications of roads, and how the roads are classified affects how they're treated, what requirements they fall into, and how and what funding is available. So this board submitted a map and table in January of this year, and we received comments back, and again, as was pointed out, most of those comments were very minor in nature. But there was one that was questioned by the technical committee, the technical advisory committee to this board, and it had to do with Saxon Boulevard, and we were recommending that be elevated in its classification from a minor arterial to a principal arterial. And I'll avoid getting into all the reasons for that, but the response back was no, that Federal Highway and DOT did not necessarily agree with that reclassification. And I think at this point, we're, from the technical level, satisfied and don't think that it is worthwhile to try and argue that any farther. I think their points were well made as to why. The thing that I want to make clear to this board, though, is it does affect funding. It affects the ability for that particular segment of road to access funding under the National Highway System. However, the National Highway System funds under MAP 21 represent almost 80% of the funding. So it is by far the largest pot of money available. But in the state of Florida, as roads were reclassified under MAP 21, we went as a state from 4,500 lane miles to almost 9,000 lane miles. So even though that pot of money is the largest single pot, the demand for that money became much higher. So in terms of what that would mean for Saxon Boulevard in the long run, it's really hard to say. Being a part of the larger pot isn't an advantage if the demand and there's so many projects ahead of it. So again, there would be a funding implication, but it's not really clear that it would be damaging in any way. Saxon Boulevard at this point has construction.
Yeah, they're just completing it.
And so again, I wouldn't at this point recommend that, and that was consistent with both the technical and citizens advisory committee, that we accept the recommendation to leave that road classified as is. There are always opportunities to go back and review roads independently if we think that there needs to be a change on Saxon or any other road.
Would that be before the annual 10 years?
Could be entirely outside of that.
So if we found a reason to review that again or to request that again, we could do that individually. The road, it has been just redone. Mayor, I don't know whether you want to make a comment because it serves a lot of your population.
Right. The only concern I have is not just that county portion that you all have just done, which is interesting to say the least. We're so glad to see them just doing the minor cleanups. My biggest concern is what's going to happen as it moves on in. The city's position is all of that land from West Finland there, you know, there's a racetrack coming in, their plans
right.
are in-house already. That's going to make a huge difference in that intersection, and that's not funded for any improvements at all. That's going to be terrible. And then all of the land on both sides of Saxon Boulevard all the way up to Normandy is already designated as commercial property.
Right.
And we're talking about going past that now up to maybe Tivoli. So
well,
it's going to make a huge difference in the amount of traffic. We've got the hospital. We've got the new Walmart coming in on Saxon. And
if you would like, we can refer this to the executive committee. Do you think that would be appropriate and have a conversation whether we want to?
Well, I think DOT and Federal Highway would like very much to have this board come to a resolution and be able to pass this and approve the maps. I think the point I'm trying to make is there are other funding options. To say that one is going to be more advantageous to the other, I can't really tell you that will be the case. I think what is probably in the best interest of this and this area and where you're headed is let the road stay as is rather than try to argue the point and continue to seek funding under the other options. And if we run into any problems, we can always then go back and revisit what options are available. In this case, again, I think they were pretty clear that they did not feel like it fit the definition of a principal arterial, and their points were well taken, so I'm not sure that we would be able to convince
why don't we address this today? We'll go ahead and adopt this, and then we can have a separate conversation as your plans.
Yeah, there's no restriction on bringing it up at a later date.
Right.
I don't have a problem with them because most of this is future planning.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Do I have a motion to? I'm sorry, Ron. I was looking for Orange City. I didn't see you.
The thing is, I understand what's going on here, and I agree with it. But when I'm looking long range, 10 years and all that, I know the subject can come up. But the question I have long range is the multiple use lanes, which will create an opening at Rhode Island, how will that play into that picture?
You're talking about for the ultimate build-out project?
The build-out with the multi-use lanes on I-4.
Yeah, actually, I think Deltona had some questions about that as well.
But that is also a very good point. As a part of that PD&E study, they are looking at, DOT is looking at all of the major access points. And there will be, if necessary, improvements to those access points as a part of that project.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at funding, if it'd make a difference.
Well, as I understand it, that will be a discussion, because I know when we were in Deltona that you all raised that Saxon issue with Florida Department of Transportation, and Noranna is sitting back there, I know, taking mental notes on this, correct, Ms. Downs? Okay.
And we got good comments back from DOT on that, you know, based on which option they choose. I mean, it's going to make a lot of difference, but it's the movement of traffic. If there's a problem on I-4, that we're more concerned with today and how they get through our city.
Yeah.
We might sell a lot of homes because people will never find their way out, but that's our biggest concern.
Okay. Pam, did we get a motion? No. Okay. I need a motion to accept the approval of the federal functional classification map.
Mm-hmm.
Who made the motion to? Okay. Mr. Saylor, thank you. Seconded by Mr. Emter. Any other additional questions? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item F, review and approval of the resolution 2014-30, amending the 2013-14 through 2017-18, Transportation Improvement Program, the TIP. And this amendment was requested by FDOT to advance construction along US 1's for signing and permitting markings, pavement markings from 2015-2016 to the current fiscal year. It's being moved up, in other words. Okay, this is a safety project, and it will include the installation of audible pavement markings on the inside and outside edges of the travel lane on US 1 from Brevard County lines north of Lagoon Avenue in Oak Hill. So is there any additional information you want to give us on that, Ms. Bollenbeck?
No.
All right, is there
move
a moved by Mr. Patterson, seconded by Mr. Gillian. Any questions on this? Any comment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Moving on to item G, review and approval of resolution 2014-31, amending the 2014-15 through 2018-19 Transportation Improvement Program, another TIP amendment. And this one includes advancing construction of US 1 signing pavement marking from fiscal 2016 to the current fiscal year, and deleting the A1A South Atlantic Avenue pedestrian crossing. The project sponsor, this is the one that you talked about earlier. Okay. Is there any questions on this one for the staff? Anything that you need to add on this?
No, just a reminder to folks, we're in that period of time where the state and fiscal years overlap. So the last TIP amendment was the old TIP, which just has a few more months of life in it. And this is an amendment.
This is the new
one. You're seeing the same project
because
it's the new TIP, and then the other project, which is being withdrawn.
And we're all rolling our eyes.
A
motion to approve by Mr. Gitt, seconded by Lee Matusik. All those in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Now we're into presentations, status report, and discussion items. And we're going to have a presentation of the results for the community values and the TEL, the TPO surveys. And I think, Jean, Lois, you're going to handle this?
I will.
Thank you.
So we've had two projects underway at the same time. One was a regional effort, and for those of you that were here, you may remember, this TPO actually contributed a small amount to the regional effort. And this is a values study. It wasn't just a simple survey. It was more in-depth research done by a firm out of Washington, D.C. And it was a public-private partnership between some of the Central Florida MPOs and TPOs, as well as the Central Florida Partnership, which funded the primary bulk of the work. And it was done in several phases. Now, it was a very in-depth study. It occurred over the course of a year. It involved a lot of interviews, some online work, some follow-up. And so I'm really just going to try and fly through it. If there's something of interest that you want me to come back to, or there's something that you want to look up and read in greater detail, then we can spend some time on that. But it was so much information, I couldn't possibly get through a lot of it today. But I think what was striking for me first had to do with quality of life. They asked the question about quality of life for folks in Central Florida. And the national average on a scale from 1 to 10 was 6.1. And here in Central Florida, it was 7.2. So we're significantly happier and more optimistic when it comes to quality of life. When they asked specifically about the economy, however, the reverse was true. We were lagging the national average, so we're still struggling in the area of the economy. When you start to pull that out county by county, you'll see Volusia County was at 65%, and the national average is 44. We are much more optimistic. And then relative to our neighbors, we're really second in terms of our optimism when it comes to quality of life. So that's very good news for Volusia County. My apologies to folks in Flagler. That was not a part of the study area. And they started asking questions, though, about regional priorities. What is important? And again, these were free-flow answers from folks. The likely suspects came up, right? Safety, crime, jobs in the economy, education, health care. These are the things we read about in the newspaper that we hear about all the time. And it's you move a ways down the list before you get to transportation issues. But then what was striking is when the question was asked, what affects you most personally in your life and what are the priorities, boom, traffic congestion comes right to the top. Because folks deal with that day to day. It's a hot button issue. And not only did that come to the top, but you can see it is completely negative. And for those of you that were at the board retreat that we held earlier this year, you may recall we spent a lot of time talking about this very issue, how when we do transportation well, we can focus on all those other issues. But when we don't do transportation well, it becomes a big issue. Now, this is not particularly consistent with surveys that we've seen and studies we've seen in Volusia County, where traffic congestion is less of an issue than it is perhaps in the Orlando area. And then they started to drill down into more detailed transportation questions. Is investing in transportation a priority? 78% say yes. That's probably not a surprise to anyone either. What are the priorities? Maintenance and repair of existing roads. And again, that's consistent with results we've seen here before. It's not necessarily the maintenance and repair, but here it's operations and preservation of the existing system. We want to see more done with what we already have. The next two items are mass transit items, which is kind of surprising in that they rank so high, but we all know not very many people really use mass transit. So if we only see 95% of the people are driving and only 5% at best are using public transit, why do so many people rank it very, very high? Moving further down the list, we see building new roads and improving bicycle and pedestrian and trail facilities. In this area, we have seen those two flipped. But again, the top five, generally the same top five we've seen here. Asking, question, why does public transportation matter if you don't use it? And it, again, we're optimistic, we're also very compassionate. It helps people. Most people recognize that it's a necessary element because there are a lot of people that depend on public transportation. It eases congestion, so even though I'm not going to use it, it takes one more car off the road, and that helps me. But when you start to ask about taxes, allocating taxes to public transportation, we start to see very different results. Now you start to get folks agreeing that public dollars should be used on mass transit, but not necessarily agreeing in an expansion of taxes. When we ask how to improve, generally people don't know. They're looking to us in the transportation industry to go ahead and come up with the solutions. They don't use it, and they don't exactly understand what needs to occur. They just kind of recognize something needs to occur. Again, increased spending, now you start to get into a 50-50 split. There's not a great deal of excitement about increasing. Again, probably not a huge surprise. Maybe the 50-50 is a surprise. They ask that similar question in a different way, which is, who do you most identify with? And they came up with two typical characters. And again, one on the more liberal side and one on the more conservative side. And again, we ended up with sort of a 50-50 split about how closely you identify with either of these two characters. Breaking it down by county, you see Volusia County, 44% believe that you should reallocate existing funds, and only 36 are interested in new funding. Of course, asking the question, what are the possible sources? Rental car surcharge comes to the lead, but generally a rental car surcharge, while it's very popular to tax people that don't live here, it doesn't generate a lot of revenue. So it alone is not going to do much for us. The second most popular, though, is implementing a regional sales tax. So again, it is getting on the radar screen. And then they tested several different messages about why people might support or believe in public transit. And the two most popular are shown up here because it ensures everybody has reliable transportation. And while all of us don't use it, it still benefits all of us. And again, that was very strong messages. But the reality is nothing in here says anything about how we would pay for that. And so, you know, it's easy to support things when you're not talking about dollars. So that was the regional research study that was done. Right at the same time we started, or towards the tail end, we started here at the TPO a survey that you all remember called Tell the TPO. We've talked about it a few times, and that is wrapped up. And so I'm going to ask Adam Bergdahl, who worked for the consulting firm of Kittleson that helped us with this survey, and he's going to come up and talk about the results of that survey.
Lee?
I just have a question before we move on. Out of those counties that were surveyed regionally, some of those have already passed an additional sales tax, either half penny. Which one of those, do you know which ones in the region have already passed some sort of transportation road project tax?
I'm not sure which of the counties have sales taxes available to them currently. The tax that was put forth in this study was a regional tax. And I think with the discussion of SunRail crossing four different counties, there is a thinking that that could help with mass transit and particularly rail.
So that would be some other source regionally.
It would be separate, and it would require a legislative change to allow it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Apter?
Lois, if I may ask, how much did we contribute to this, and what did this study cost totally? Do you remember?
I'm going to have to give you some rough numbers. I think it was about $288,000 total, and the TPOs contributed somewhere around $22,000 to $25,000. We contributed a couple thousand.
Okay.
So in terms of benefit, bang for the buck, for $2,000, we got a lot of great information.
Yeah, one follow-up question. I mean, regardless of the numbers, but I appreciate knowing that. What in this whole study was of any consequence to us, number one? Number two, was there anything in here that you found anywhere near unusual? To me, and if I remember correctly, I questioned this at the very beginning when it was approved, as to the validity of the purpose of it in the first place. I certainly didn't find anything in there that I would guess, if you took a show of hands around this table and asked the same questions, you'd darn well come up with almost the same answers. It just seems to me a little ludicrous to spend that amount of money total, regardless of how much we put into it, that much public money for a study that, in my opinion, has no validity whatsoever in terms of telling us anything new or giving us any practical consideration of how to move forward. That bothers me.
Well, I think a couple of points I could make. One is a reminder. About a tenth of the study was public funds. The rest came from the Central Florida Partnership, which is, and the foundation, which are private sector. It's the Chamber of Commerce, basically, in the Orlando area. So most of it was funded with private funds. And I think it was a good partnership. I think as well, the study wasn't specifically transportation-based. So there was a lot of information. It's not our area, so I didn't go into any of that, dealing with crime and education and healthcare. And the idea here really was they were trying to get down to, are there key issues that they consider source dilemmas, which if you resolve that issue, it would benefit several. And transportation becomes one of those. If we talk about how we access jobs and healthcare and education, having a way to get there is important. And so if you focus on solving some of the transportation problems, you actually help boost some of those other areas. And that's a part of, I think, what they tried to get from this. Was there anything that was a revelation? No, there wasn't. But for those of you that were around then, in the last long-range plan, we did a survey, but we got some criticism about the results of that survey because it wasn't statistically valid. I reminded folks when we have public meetings, they're not statistically valid either, but the information we get from them is still very valuable to us. And I think if you look at this survey and then you listen to Adam's presentation on the survey that we did, you'll see from the last long-range plan to this very high-priced survey or research study to our tell the TPO, you see consistency. And after a while, you have to say, okay, this is a pretty clear message that we should be taking forward. And the point of this for us was to help guide decisions that we make in the long-range plan.
Okay, we'll move to Adam's presentation now. Would you state your name again for the record?
Yes, I'm Adam Berghoff. I'm with Kittleson & Associates, the lead consultant on the TELE-TPO survey that you all had a chance to participate in. We just wrapped it up about a month ago now. Just to give you guys a little reminder about what this survey was all about. First of all, we wanted to increase the awareness. Who was a TPO? And then also kind of spread the branding around. We've got a new planning area that we've just kind of moved out into now. So let's try and pick up and generate some interest in that area and inform people what the TPO is and does. Also, the underlying purpose behind the study is to get an idea about what people think about transportation, or who's traveling where, how are they traveling, how do they want to travel, and ultimately, are they interested in any other funding type strategies. So we worked with a great working group of consisting of the RPC, FDOT, each county, and as well as the private sector through VCARD. And we were able to develop the survey. This is how everybody had some valuable input and how it was put together. And I'd like to thank everybody for that participated in the working group. So for our outreach program, this just stats that we had, we reached out to Rethink. Rethink's a ride-sharing type program that's kind of a division of FDOT. They have a huge database. Every board member was an ambassador in this challenge. We partnered with Team Volusia, the chambers. We're able to present in front of One Voice for Volusia to reach out to a whole plethora of different nonprofit organizations. We have social media blitzes, and we were featured in some newspaper articles as well as on the radio with Big John, who's not paying attention. he was so polite to bring us on the radio. Lois was right in the studio with him a couple months ago. Action shot. you know, that helped us get it out. And the idea is that we reached out to a bunch of different people. We were able to grab FDOT Secretary Prasad as he was coming through town a couple months ago to help us out and help to disseminate, tell some folks that he's connected with in the Department of Transportation as well to take that, because that's a major employer here in the county. So in summary, it ran for 3 months. We were able to generate 1,263 responses.
Would you say that was a good number or a bad number?
We dwarfed Miami-Dade and Broward County's long-range transportation plan survey effort for a fraction of the budget.
Okay.
Previous LRTP effort with the 2035 long-range plan, I think, Lois, we had 600-800 or so folks that reached out. Again, it was part of a larger budget, larger scale type outreach. So I think we got a great response, and for much less fee. It was also successful. We did increase awareness. This map here, the darker, this is all set up by zip codes. The darker the shade, the more responses we were able to generate. So you see in our newer planning area up to the north, yeah, we had a great response, a great turnout. You know, so we were able to spread the word, introduce folks that may not be as familiar with what the TPO does to the TPO, and the issue is important. Also, Deltona was kind of bringing up second place there. Additionally, as far as spreading outreach and letting people understand a little bit more about transportation, one of our side goals, there was a question, you could opt into the emailing database for these various organizations. So the TPO, we had 300 people opt into to Pam's email blasting and Facebook things. Rethink, 139 people signed up to be in the loop on Rethink's new activities, 217 for VOTRAN, 378 for SunRail. So we're spreading the word about transportation. So let's get into some of the raw data. I'm going to flip through this pretty quick, but I'd like to just, first of all, caveat that there was Lois and I were talking a couple weeks ago about how similar the survey that she just presented and the survey results that we have are. So really quickly, a third of the responses note that they walk or bike and or bike daily. Also, not surprising, 90% of the responses drive alone daily. I wasn't that surprised. The one-third walking and biking also, that pleasantly surprised me. Generally, folks, there's a significant number of people that are satisfied with ped and trails, ped facilities, trails. Starting to lag a little bit with the bike lanes, people being satisfied with bike lanes. There's a low satisfaction rate with the transit service. I think that might be indicative of the number of responses that we received in the northern area of the planning boundary. But 40 and 50% of the respondents are satisfied with the roadway infrastructure that we have here today. So we asked also, what's the reason, if you don't walk or bike, why? Well, our lovely weather is one of the things that's probably influencing these results, but we have 50% that said that the distance is too far between point A and point B. They're afraid to get caught in the rain. It's hot. 30% say it's a safety issue. The roadway traffic is making them feel uncomfortable. 23% said a lack of facilities in general to either walk or bike is impacting their decision. So we said, all right, if you were to take transit, what could make it more attractive to you? If you're not taking transit now, what would make it more attractive? 50% are saying we need more stops and they're needing more convenient. 40% of the folks are saying, I don't have service. If I had service, I would ride it. And then another 40% are saying that transit service, including SunRail, all together. Interesting enough, 12% are citing that the fares need to be lowered. That's a really low number, so your fares are really spot on. And 10% are saying that the buses are not clean, need to be cleaner or safer, and that's a very low number as well.
Can I ask questions at this point?
Sure, yeah.
On that slide, where it talks about 50% more convenient, more stops, more routes, do you worry that that's giving you a negative response for VOTRAN because Flagler County doesn't have a fixed route system?
It's very true. This number is not split up between the two counties, so there's probably some skew there. However, I don't think if we were to ask VOTRAN representatives that they would be surprised at something like this, because even at VOTRAN, we have great presence here on the eastern part of the county. There's areas elsewhere in Volusia County that are lacking. So I'm assuming that the responses are probably somewhat similar.
We also have the information by zip code. We can pull that out.
We can split it up. These are just some high level.
Well, we frequently hear that in Flagler. Palm Coast is very difficult to do a response.
Yeah. Thank you. So we also asked a question, if we were to, if we're investing our money, where should it go? You have more than 70% of the folks that responded saying we need to invest in modes other than driving, so bike, ped, transit. Over 60% are saying let's improve what we already have. Let's improve the operational efficiency. These are like signal timing type efforts, adding turn lanes here and there, not making new or bigger roads necessarily, but just increasing the efficiency that are there. And that speaks to the last point, where there's 40% that say we don't want to invest anymore in adding new lanes. Let's, divert those funds. So where do we prioritize the funding? 60%, 75% are saying bike, ped, and transit type prioritization for their funding. And there's 50% of the people out there that are saying existing roadways need to stay the same. We're investing enough. Let's keep it the same. We don't need to invest more. That's what 50% of people are saying. So then came the big question. All right, so you all agree we want to fund some more transportation. How do we do that? 46%. So we had various categories, similar to what Lois showed you. We didn't have the rental car surcharge, but that would probably give you a similar result. But it was things like half-cent sales tax, ad valorem taxes. There was a list to choose from. One was, I don't want to spend anything on transportation. And then the other choice, which is the overwhelming response, was I think there needs to be a dedicated source, but we need a little bit more information about what that source could and should be and what it could pay for. So that's the last of the raw data. If you all remember, we challenged you to a little competition regarding...
We had a big trophy, if I remember.
We have a big trophy. Unfortunately, the trophy was not able to make it today, but I have a certificate for today.
Whoa. Time out. There's a trophy.
The trophy will come, and I can bring it to the next meeting.
The next meeting, trophy presentation first thing.
I will love
to. Very competitive on this board.
You are. We had a great response, and we appreciate it. I forget the exact number, it's on the next slide, but there was a huge influx of responses generated by the ambassadors, and I'd like to thank you all for that. I think it was almost a third of the responses in total. So who's the winner? That's what we all want to know. Drum roll. So a third of the responses. Congratulations.
Hey.
Really disappointed the trophy is in here.
I got a certificate for you. I would love to bring you the trophy next time. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you.
Very much appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
So
they bait you with a big trophy. What did you end up getting? A ribbon or a piece of paper?
They're giving him a trophy. They better get his trophy.
Not even we're giving great.
Not even a photo op.
we'll get that next month, I promise.
Very nice car stuff, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions?
Any other questions on the report?
How many? Do you know how many responses?
Exactly. I think you were at like 400.
Oh, wow.
408?
Wow.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Remind me, Ms. Bolenbeck, do we, I know in County Council we always accept a report. I can't remember if we do that here. Do we
We're not presenting a report at this point.
Okay.
This is just information for presentation.
This is results. Okay.
If anybody wants to has follow-up question, we can, you know, whenever you have data, you can slice and dice it a lot of different ways. If you want to see the data specifically by county.
I was going to ask if the data that created this could be spread out for Flagler County.
Yeah, we collected it all by zip code, so we're able to cut it up into different regions if we'd like. And
I think that the cities and the county would love to see that.
We'd like to have a recount, I think.
I would just go back to two studies with very, very different approaches, but I think there are very similar responses that we've seen. And again, as we go in developing our long-range plan, we'll be bringing this information back for consideration.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Adam. Okay, we'll move it to item B under presentations. This is the design alternatives for the Titusville to Edgewater Loop project development and the environmental PD&E study. And Stephen Harris, are you going to handle this one for us?
We have Amy Sermons from MPOT. I'm going to address this project.
Good morning. My name is Amy Sermons with the DOT, Department of Transportation. I'm a project development engineer. I'm here for Jaslyn Haywood, who's actually the project manager. You've seen her in some of the previous presentations. We're here to talk about what we've done so far on our project development environment study. We will be having a public workshop. We've had one in the past. It'll be September 23rd. But I'm going to have a consultant come up and give you the details. We have Fraser Howell and Art Thompson from Metro, and Fraser's going to go over the details of your project.
Thanks, Amy. Chairman Northey and board members, thank you for the opportunity to give you our recommendations for this PD&E study. Again, I'm Fraser Howe with Metro Consulting Group, the consultant on the project, and this is the outline of my presentation today. I'm going to keep it brief. I want to remind the board here that our original charge was to study a connection between the two ends of the East Central Regional Rail Trail in Titusville and Edgewater. I'm going to be presenting today what's happening, what our results are in Volusia County, not just because this is the TPO region, but also because as a result of our coordination with the federal agencies with jurisdiction in Merritt Island, they're going to require a higher level of analysis than was scoped in our study. And so our outcome from this study is going to be a feasibility report that will recommend the scope for a future PD&E study in Merritt Island that will comply with the requirements of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Park Service, and NASA. Our purpose and need, of course, was to provide a national destination for both recreational and experienced trail users, to provide access to the scenic natural areas in the county, and, of course, to provide that connection between the two ends of the regional rail trail. And by our symbols, we're indicating that we also want to be able to provide a trail facility that casual users will be able to use. You're going to hear a presentation shortly on your U.S. One Corridor Improvement Program. We've been coordinating with that effort, and the recommendations that we're making along this part of U.S. One in southern Volusia County, we believe are consistent with the recommendations from the corridor study. So, cut right to the chase, our recommendation is for a continuous separate two-way trail along the east side of US 1 from Kennedy Parkway all the way up to Park Avenue and then down Park Avenue to Dale Street to connect with the regional rail trail. South of Halifax, from a point 200 feet south of Halifax Avenue, which is exactly the point where the Oak Hill sidewalk stops, we are recommending that ultimately a 10 to 12 foot wide trail be constructed. And ultimately replace an existing 5-foot sidewalk at such time as the full project would be constructed so that you have a two-way facility on that side separate from the roadway. Within that gap of the current sidewalk in Oak Hill, we do not have a recommendation to acquire the additional right-of-way that would be needed. The lines here indicate that the right-of-way in front of the Dollar General store stops at the shoulder. So while that green space looks attractive for a sidewalk, it would require acquiring right-of-way to do so. And north of Halifax, at the saddle shop, you can see that the right-of-way would also involve acquiring property to be able to build it there. And in a few moments, I'll address what we did discuss down in Oak Hill. Actually, right here. I moved the slide. So, and this is one that you don't have in your handout. As a result of my presentations earlier this month to your Bike and Ped Committee and your Citizens and Transportation Tech Committee, I added two slides to be able to address issues that they discussed. And one of those was what we termed the Oak Hill jug handle. And back in March of 2013, my DOT project manager and I met with Mayor Gibson and staff at Oak Hill to look at the request that they had for a route off US 1 in this area. And we are trying to provide that continuity with this trail connection. And these loops off the route are certainly valid considerations that we think the local governments would want to bring forward through your own trail prioritization process to connect to this US 1 route. North of Oak Hill, once again, we're recommending the separate shared use path on the east side of US 1. We do have two canals or lateral ditches, as we call them, to cross. And our cost estimates for this portion of the trail do include either a bridge or a culvert extension to be able to bring the trail over these rather wide ditches. On US 1 again, from Indian River Boulevard up to Orange Avenue, that section right now has paved shoulders and sidewalks for the most part on both sides. There is a design approved for a sidewalk in Oak Hill that will, or pardon me, in Edgewater that will connect the gaps in that portion of the sidewalk. The right-of-way width there is far less on the east side than it was south of State Road 442. And again, to acquire a right-of-way and build a trail along one side would have very significant impacts on the drainage, the driveways, the utilities. There'd be a lot of reconstruction to provide one facility where you now have both paved shoulders and sidewalks and a lower speed limit in that area. And finally, the traffic signal at 442 would allow cyclists who are southbound on the western shoulder to cross over safely to this two-way trail, which would be south of 442. And then between Orange Avenue and Park Avenue, there are existing bike lanes in that section that has curb and gutter and sidewalks on both sides. And once again, the right-of-way is very tight in that area. Continuing our route from US 1 west to the FEC railroad crossing on Park Avenue, we looked at two options. We think the preferable one would be to restripe the road to provide a four-foot bike lane on both sides of the road to separate cycle traffic from vehicular traffic. The other alternative we looked at would be a sharrow marking that would tell vehicles that bikes can use the full lanes, but know that there's a higher volume of truck traffic on that road. So that's not our recommendation. And again, there are not shoulders, and there's a very tight right-of-way in this area. And the speed limit is much lower. It's a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit in this section. And then west of the FEC railroad tracks out of Dale Street, it is what we call a roll section. We are recommending paved shoulders to supplement the sidewalks that already exist over most of that section. And the connection to the rail trail would be at Dale Street. We also looked at a potential trailhead location in the Bills Hill area. There are a couple of parcels there, and the two north of the Wildlife Refuge have a rural future land use designation on the front and an environmental systems corridor on the back. We think that this would be an appropriate location for a trailhead outside the Wildlife Refuge. It's possible that the Wildlife Refuge could develop a trailhead at their northern entrance. This is something that was contemplated in their visitor services plan. But for a, since we're now making recommendations outside the Wildlife Refuge, we are recommending this as a site for a trailhead. Funding. Our cost estimate to build a total trailhead trail from Kennedy Parkway up to Park and then down Park to Dale Street is $6.8 million for 12.7 miles. Currently, there is no design phase funded. We have made recommendations that it stay within the existing right-of-way, so there would be no need to fund a right-of-way acquisition. And construction, of course, is not funded at this point. We did look at other alternatives. A less desirable one would be simply resurfacing the existing shoulders on US 1. We also looked at an off US 1 route that was suggested and, in fact, is preferred by the City of Edgewater. That would take the trail west of US 1 along Roberts Road, past Whistle Stop Park and Indian River Elementary School, across the FEC railroad tracks to Hibiscus, and then run between Hibiscus Drive and the railroad tracks north, crossing 442 at an unsignalized intersection, and again a little further north up to 16th Street, west on 16th to Mango Tree, and north Mango Tree back to Park. There are a great number of residential parcels, particularly north of 442. A possible way to implement this might be to do the trail south of 442. At 442, there are bike lanes where riders could go either west to the regional rail trail or back east to US 1. But once again, while this is a good route, we would recommend that it be brought forward through the TPO's trail prioritization process. Adjacent projects, as I mentioned, in Brevard, we're working on a feasibility report on how to address the only acceptable alternative that they are looking for as an off-road path, and our scope was also expanded in this feasibility report to take the trail all the way out to Clayland Beach so that it would provide the eastern end of the coast-to-coast trail system. So we then had to look at the requirements of both federal agencies. So that's going to be forthcoming in Brevard County. Kennedy Space Center Loop is studying running the route of US 1 along the mainland from Titusville north to this connection point of Kennedy Parkway. And I won't go too far with the Shiloh Launch Complex. That could change everything. Both we and the Wildlife Refuge are simply weighing the outcome of the environmental impact study that's currently being done for the Shiloh Complex. Our next steps, as Amy mentioned, we have a final public workshop scheduled for September 23rd at Edgewater Community Center to give a public presentation of these recommendations and obtain any feedback at that point. Our scope, of course, is to obtain an approved environmental document for our segment here. Our final documents will be both a preliminary engineering report and environmental tech memos for the impacts of this project. And we'll be completing the rest of our work. The one thing I wanted to mention, that third bullet, once the project is funded for design, maintenance, and maintenance agreements between the department and the cities and counties would need to be distributed and negotiated, because I know one of the big questions is who's going to maintain this trail. And that would be the subject of these agreements that would be negotiated between the department and the local jurisdictions. We do have a website, titusvilledgewatertrail.com, where we have posted information about the project. We'll post this presentation. And this is contact information for Jasmine, the DOT project manager, and myself. And I'm now ready to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. There are any? Lois, did you
Madam Chair, I just want to remind the board, this was a gift given to us by the Space Coast Area TPO. We weren't necessarily looking to do this study, but Space Coast pursued the PD&E with DOT. But like some gifts, it wasn't really the right size. And so along the way, we asked Jaslyn Haywood to go back and make some changes to the scope. And I want to give a thanks, if you could pass that along, Amy, to Jaslyn. The DOT went back and revised the scope and came back with, I think, some work that is much more in line with kind of the direction that this TPO is headed. And there are obviously still some hurdles to overcome, But I would remind you, we are doing a trail corridor improvement program, which is just being kicked off. And so we'll probably come back and address some of those. So again, I think there's some very good work being done here. But as Fraser mentioned, there are some huge hurdles outside of this planning area that would have to be overcome for any of this to move forward. So there's still a lot more to be considered with this particular project.
But it was very good to see that our concerns about width and separated trails were taken seriously. Lee?
And that was going to be, you know, my comment as well. It was kind of a surprise to all of us, you know, when it first started. And Pat and I attended a meeting, and you know, we're really concerned. And one of the things that I'm still a little concerned with is calling this thing a trail. People view trails, right or wrong, but the word trail usually means everything is totally on a separate facility off of the roadway. And that's not what we have here. And from the presentation, I'm not sure that this loop is ever going to get there because of right-of-way issues. So maybe we need to come up with a name working with our partners in Brevard that will more fit what this is going to be and represent both areas. So I would like to look at that as well. The other thing is, and Pat and I have talked about it at length, is the coast-to-coast connector. And this is going to be a big piece because Brevard has come in and said that they are the starting and or ending point for the coast-to-coast connector. We have that opportunity, and I don't want it to get faded away, that we can also be the coast-to-coast connector by connecting all the way to the Atlantic through New Smyrna up into Edgewater to pick this up and to pick up the coast-to-coast connector, and us to be the start of the coast-to-coast. And it is. And I don't want to see that portion. I know there's been some discussions with the city of New Smyrna and Edgewater and the county on how to do that. And I think that that's the next critical piece that we need to see and to be pushed, because in looking at where Brevard is, I'm not sure when that connection's going to make it all the way over to the Atlantic. And I think that we are in a better position to do it quicker and make that connection to be that coast-to-coast connector, and then also support them when they get theirs there. But so I think that coast-to-coast connector from New Smyrna to Edgewater, and I do appreciate you looking at our comments on this and working with the city of Edgewater and this and the town of Oak Hill, because those were some really critical issues that, you know, that we had from what the original design, you know, was going to be.
Okay. Good thoughts, because that has been a clear concern that we don't, for marketing purposes and for ecotourism, nature-based tourism, we do not want to be left out of the coast-to-coast connector as an end point, that we wanted to be sure that we were included in that. So, okay, I see no other comments. Okay, thank you, Edgewater. I was wondering. Thank you very much. And this report will be moved on to the greater report that we're doing on loop closures, correct, Ms. Bollenbeck? Well, this will be used in that report?
In the corridor, the regional trail corridor plan? Yes, it absolutely will.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll come back and address some other issues. You know, when we see something like that gap, there's a gap in Oak Hill, maybe federal funding isn't the appropriate way, because there are easier ways to acquire right-of-way.
Yeah.
So, you know, the solution to something, there are
I also think the Edgewater piece that is, you know, was outlined but not accepted, that needs to be looked at very carefully, because that's their town. It's going right through their town, and we have to be very very concerned that they're on board with that, and that's what they want, what you all want. So.
Yeah, just a quick comment. We very much appreciate the study, too. And it is an ongoing discussion, and I'm confident it will be.
Yeah, I am too.
Resolved.
Yeah, we will have success, I'm sure. Thank you.
I just want to thank Steve Harris and the staff at both Edgewater and Oak Hill. They've been very good to work with.
Okay. Okay, we have about 20 minutes. I'd like us to be out of here by 10:30, so we got 20 minutes to do two more reports. Can we get that done, Ms. Bollenbeck? The next one is presentation on the 2040 long-range transportation plan draft environmental justice assessment. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yes, it is. And good morning, everybody. I'm Martha Moore with Giabi Associates. And since the board last met in June, we've been continuing our work on the update to the long-range transportation plan for 2040. And one component of that is the environmental justice analysis. And when you hear environmental justice, you may think this has to do with birds and bunnies, wildlife, wetlands, but it's really the human environment that we're looking for. And we want to be able to identify underserved populations within the Metropolitan Planning Area, the MPA. And so we've done an analysis which we look at where are the locations of minority populations, the zero vehicle households, low income, elderly populations. And we'll have that information. And that will help inform us later as we're developing our project list, we're doing public involvement, and just tell us where we need to reach out to and how we need to consider where those populations are located. And Transystems is our team member on the LRTP update, and they've done this analysis. I have Andy Nichol, who's come here, is going to present today. We're available to answer questions as we go through. If you want to ask a question or wait till later, that'd be great.
Okay.
So, Andy?
Andy?
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
I'm getting the be short sign, so I will try and be as efficient as possible. Good morning, board and chair. As Martha mentioned, we're going to walk through the environmental justice data as part of the 2040 LRTP. Hopefully you're all pretty aware of what environmental justice pertains to, so I won't go through this in too much detail. But what we do want to do is identify locations of environmental justice critical areas that are low income or minority that we can try and avoid disproportionately impacting by decisions that we're making in the planning process. So we look at data from the census and the American Community Survey and try and locate those populations. So to just go through some slides quickly about the low income populations that we identified. Central Volusia County, south of 92, and you can see from this dark brown that is on the slide there. Hopefully you guys can all see that okay. This area has a relatively high concentration of low-income residents, so that's one area we want to look at. Southwest Volusia County, generally in the DeLand, Lake Helen area, south along US 1792 in particular. Northwest Volusia County, generally the west of Pearson, in that Pearson area, we want to make sure that we don't have any disproportionate impacts on the low-income side. Southeast Volusia County, most notably, the population center of that area really is being Oak Hill. East Volusia County, Holly Hill, Daytona Beach, and South Daytona. Of course, it's not the whole municipality, but we do identify pockets based on census block groups and tracts that we can really isolate those low-income populations. Southwest Flagler County, north of State Road 100. Now to talk quickly about minority populations, and they're defined here on the screen, and it follows the census, the American census designation for how we define minority populations. The River to Sea TPO average is about 25%. It's that's below the statewide average of 40%, just to put it in perspective. Northeast Volusia County, generally the area of Daytona Beach, has approximately 97% minorities in certain pockets in census areas of this municipality. Deltona, about 45% to 50% in Providence and Saxon Boulevard area. Also in DeLand, you can see again by the dark brown areas, there are generally two pockets on the east and west side of I believe that's 1792, or Woodland, through DeLand there. And then Flagler County, our neighbors to the north there, have some areas that are around 25 to 40% west of 95, north of State Road 100. And then northwest Volusia County, again, generally in that Pearson area, north of Lake Woodruff, and west of Pearson. And New Smyrna Beach has a couple pockets of minority populations there that are near Halleck Street, State Road 1. So to summarize all of this, the intent intent of this is where can we identify areas that may have two or more environmental justice overlaps or areas of concern? And that's what we summarized here. I'm not going to read these slides in detail for you. Hopefully you have the printout in front of you. But our study provides this to the LRTP 2040 group so that we can do good outreach and make sure that the public is engaged. And we will target these populations and make sure that they are part of the process. So there's five areas: Daytona Beach, the land, northwest of Deltona, southwest of Orange City, Bunnell, and New Smyrna Beach. Those are the key areas. Again, those are large areas. We do get into a more narrow focus on particular areas of focus. So there's my contact information, and if you guys have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Lee?
That portion in DeLand, you have State Road 15. It's 15A, which will, you know, make a difference in what you're looking at. So if you can
make
that
make that
correction on there. Thank you.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Jason? I'm sorry, the vice chair is making fun of you here.
My staff is working with you, I believe, on some concerns that we have in some of the study areas. Some of them don't line up with the conditions that we're familiar with.
Sure.
So if I'll just ask that you please continue to work. So.
Yeah, we've been working on that with Bob and some other folks here at the TPO, and we will address those.
Thank you.
I don't see any other comments, and we need to motion to accept this or not.
We don't.
This is just information, right?
But that is a great segue into really one of the points of this is to make sure you have an opportunity to look at this information, and if you have any questions about it or you have any additional input, as Andy mentioned, it in part helps us identify communities that we need to really take some special time to outreach and engage. Likewise, to make sure that we're not having any adverse impacts when we start to develop the plan. So if there's anything we're missing or anything that you think is inappropriately represented, by all means, please let us know.
Thank you, Andy. Our final presentation before we go into reports is a presentation on the final US 1 Phase 2 Corridor Improvement Program, the CIP, and who's handling that?
Hi, I'm Judy Pizzo, Planning Project Manager for the Florida DOT.
Okay, welcome. It's a Judy?
Judy Pizzo. This is actually a two-part report that initially Phase 1 was done by the TPO. And Phase 2, we've had the privilege of the department to do the second half. I want to thank the board for allowing us to present today. There is a lot of information to cover that, given the time constraint, we're not going to be able to do in its entirety. So I encourage you to download the report. The half is on the green sheet here on page 110. And if you have any difficulty, please do get in touch with me or my consultant staff, Adam Bergdorf, who's going to be giving the presentation here. We've also got in its entirety the report link as well. So, Adam?
Lois, before we move on to that, is this something that we want to bring back at another time? Is it something we'll be voting on later?
Typically what we'll do is bring presentations in. This is not our study. This is DOT's study,
okay.
So we're not approving this.
Okay.
You'll see the environmental justice back, and you'll see a final survey. But generally what we do is we take the time under presentations to talk about them while we still have the opportunity to make changes to those reports. Then we bring them back and usually
breeze
through them when we get ready to adopt.
Okay, thank you. Adam?
All right, so Adam Bergdorf again. So Kittleson Associates actually worked on Phase 1 under the TPO, and we were also retained by FDOT to work through Phase 2. I'm going to make this quick. I'm going to be flipping through several slides, so please interrupt me if you have questions, and I'm available afterwards if you'd like to discuss. So a quick overview. Phase 1, as a reminder, we went through several documents, gathered a bunch of data. It was a huge data collection activity working with all the affected agencies along US 1 from basically county line to county line. One of the outcomes was an interactive GIS tool that we can actually see all these projects that have been planned along US 1. Stakeholders that were involved included every municipal agency along US 1, as well as the private sector and state parks and other, and Beltran. The goals for Phase 2 were established, and it was to understand first what are the travel patterns along US 1, what's a vision for US 1, what's it going to look like, what can it look like, and then also to identify a plan or some action items that can help to process we take, essentially in summary, we're taking phase one, reaching out to, which the number one goal was to become multimodal in general, and then also to support economic development. So our process was, let's collect all of the data, analyze it, work with our working group to figure out what does this data mean, what can it look like, and then come up with the action plan, which you'll see soon is actually set up into what we're calling character districts. The first item we looked at, this is census data. What this essentially says is that anybody that lives within a one-mile swath of US-1, this is plotting where they work. So you can see a significant number of folks that live along US-1 are working near US-1. This is kind of similar to what Andy kind of presented, where we have we've mapped income. Income is in the color, but we've also mapped on top of that zero-power households. Where do we need different forms of transportation? As you can see, there's a density of zero-car households in the Daytona Beach area. I just want to point that out. We also looked at what are the traffic patterns along the roadway. I meant to say, the left picture is northern US-1 from Ormond down to southern areas of Port Orange, and then the right picture is from basically Spruce Creek all the way down south to Oak Hill. Looked at what are the traffic volumes been doing on US-1? In US-1, they haven't been growing. However, we looked at Nova Road also on the northern section, because it's actually State Road 5A, it's the alternate route. We're seeing that there is some growth along Nova Road. And then there's some growth up in the northern area around Ormond Crossing as well. We also collected anonymous cell phone data. This cell phone data was meant to determine, all right, are US-1 or Nova Road being used as a regional trip? What we found was that for both Nova Road and US-1, those are predominantly local trips. So if you're entering from the south or from the north, whichever direction you would like to think about it, and you're traveling along US-1, over 50% are dropping off in the Daytona Beach area. Less than 10% are going from one end of basically Nova Road to the other end of Nova Road. So these roads are being used to facilitate local trips. We also mapped bike and ped safety data, and this is from the last 7 years, and it's injuries and fatalities. That's all it's shown right now. But I'd like to point out there's a significant number in the Daytona Beach area, more so than along the rest of the corridor. We also mapped existing and planned parks and trails. You know, the goal is to be more multimodal. How can we connect some of these pieces here, and what gaps might there be? So what we developed with the working group after we collected and analyzed all this data was some four distinct character districts. The one that's kind of difficult to see is rural in this beige color. It's just more of your typical wide right-of-way, wide median, US-1. The next one is this green color, and that's what we're calling eco-byway. It actually aligns well with Fraser's presentation on the Titus Village Water Trail. And then we have a more of a traditional section, which is kind of your traditional US-1. And then these red areas are what we're calling the urban village centers. And those are predominantly based on some sort of plan that the local municipality has already set forth to create, whether it's a CRA or some sort of downtown plan of sorts. So we mapped those out. And I said, all right, what are our needs? So working with the working group, we've developed a variety of principles. First was to enhance local multimodal mobility along the whole area. Next, let's increase connectivity to the east and the west. It's north-south corridor. We also have assets to the east and west of the corridor. What can we do to leverage local and state investments? What I mean is we have CRAs in place. We have local downtown plans in place. What can we do to leverage these to help catalyze economic investment? And then next, US-1 connects several environmental assets along the corridor. So what can we do to brand US-1 to connect those assets for ecotourism type activities? Here are some strategies. I'm going to fly through these here in the next couple slides. First of all, we mapped bike and ped gaps that are along the corridor. Now, this TPO has been very good about identifying projects to address a lot of bike ped type projects. However, we have a bunch of different projects that we identified from phase one. put them all together, but there's still a couple of opportunities that we have to connect some gaps. And that also includes connecting transit to some of these non-vehicular type projects. So we've identified the gaps, and that's something that could be moved forward in the next day into a further analysis. Next, what are the land use and regulatory type changes? What I'd like to say here is that several of the municipalities along the way already have these regulatory type policies in place. We have CRAs established, we've got TCEAs established, and everybody's kudos to everybody, basically, is what I'd like to say here. We didn't have a whole lot more to add to that. You guys are stepping in the right direction. The next piece is that for these character districts, we also have what can the road itself look like? Can it have a different cross section? So we worked with the department to vet some various cross section alternatives that might be palatable given the correct context. So this is what essentially US-1 looks like. We have four lanes with bike lanes in areas, sidewalks, and then a 22-to-30-foot median. In these urban village centers, there's a couple of different options. We have two. One's a little bit higher cost, one's a little bit lower cost. This one is a little bit higher cost alternative, but it allows for all modes and on-street parking. So you can see PEDs, parking, bike lanes, and cars. The one restriction that we have here is that the median, in order to fit it within the right-of-way, had to be a little bit too narrow to facilitate U-turns. So it needs to be applied in an area that we can facilitate some sort of baggage road type movement for these U-turns, or we're okay with restricting U-turns. Option two is the same, to be applied in the same type of area. However, what we're not doing is we're not moving curb lines. It's a little bit cheaper, and we're still able to keep on-street parking that's critical to a downtown type feel, maintain a wider median. The one thing that's missing from this picture is exclusive bike facilities. So there's other options that are out there. We have sharrows that could potentially be used in certain areas, but most likely we need to provide or make sure that there's some sort of parallel facility that can carry the bikes. And the local agencies will need to keep that in mind as they're moving these things forward. The next section is much like the existing section, is what we're calling the traditional section, where we have just a standard four-lane road, bike lanes, 5-foot sidewalks, and 22-foot medians. Not much different than what we have out there today in many areas. The next section is the Eco Byway area. So it's for the southern portion down south of Edgewater Oak Hill area, where the PD&E study is being performed, in the center right around Spruce Creek and some of the and Rose Bay, and then up toward the Tomoka State Park, just north of Ormond Beach, where we can actually have a enough right-of-way to put this two-way shared-use path along with. So we looked at, we analyzed and weighed all the options, and then went back to the working group and the public, and we got some feedback. And the public generally preferred option two in the urban village center, which is a cheaper option, doesn't require full reconstruction, but they understand also that the bike lanes are not there, so there's some discussions that need to be had. And then also this traditional section, if it's not broke, let's not fix it. There's other more low-cost alternatives that don't involve actually changing the roadway. It's increasing the efficiency of what we have through transit signal priority and enhanced signal timings. Also, for connecting the economic assets along the corridor, what can we do? Is there an educational, marketing, or branding-type campaign that US-1 can use throughout the length of the county to connect these assets along the way? So I'm sorry I flew through that really quickly. The report, as Judy mentioned, is available on cflroads.com. It should be in your packet. It's also available on the TPO's website. Just added a couple weeks ago. And if you guys have any questions, we'll be happy to answer.
Any questions? Lois, anything you want to add?
Just remind folks that the purpose of this was for us to have a better understanding of what the communities needed and wanted along US-1 so that we can give them the transportation facility that suits them. And I think those cross sections at the end give each of the communities options for moving forward.
Can you just answer a question for me? Years ago, we did a US-1 corridor study. How is this different from what we did about 10 years ago, I think it was?
It was, and that's actually what started this whole program, is out of that study, there was a time when this TPO was going to widen US-1 to 6 lanes.
Right, and we decided that
and
wasn't an option.
We did a
option.
Major corridor study, but that corridor study cost almost $1 million. It was a 2-year process, and the results were, no, we don't want to widen US 1. It would be cost prohibitive. But in order for US 1 to function well, we have to add lots and lots of transit, and we have to make intersection improvements. But we never added lots and lots of transit, and we never made the intersection improvements. And when we started to do the last long-range plan, develop the last long-range plan, I started asking the question of, what are we doing about these intersections? What did we implement out of that study? And it, in part, helped move those intersections along. The DOT said, we do need to actually implement those changes. But in doing that, we had to go back and say, well, do they still apply?
Okay.
Over the decade, a lot of changes occurred, and our approach to developing downtowns and what we wanted to do changed. And so we went back, but we said, we don't want to do another $1 million study. That's crazy. What we want to do is, there's been hundreds of studies done on intersections, done on segments. In addition to that, let's pull all of that together and say, what do you really want and need? Well, we did that for about 130,000.
Okay. So this is really kind of like an update.
Let's just refresh, update, okay, and decide, okay, where we need to go and what we can we give you that you need.
Great. Okay.
And may I segue onto that? That in that phase one study that was done, there is an incredible database that all the local governments have bought into and screened through and said, okay, what works for us and what is our neighbor doing? It's a great intergovernmental opportunity. And with the phase two, it's given you the cross sections that are applicable that have already, as Adam has pointed out, been vetted through the department that you can say, hey, I want to put this, I want to utilize this somewhere down the road in the future.
Great.
So it's a good tool for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we are losing people as we go along.
Yeah.
Barbara?
Really quickly, I know that as we, Flagler County, are coming into these types of programs a little late, I just didn't know what the dates were of when this started and when something like that might be seen for Flagler County's US 1 corridor.
We'll be discussing that next month.
Okay.
All right. Good deal. Okay. We will move on to FDOT reports. Claudia, you have anything that you need to share with us that you'd like us to know about?
Due to the time, I won't go into my construction report, but I did
want
to take a moment to introduce Ryan Marks. He's taken on a new position with the department.
Welcome,
Ryan. He's the Freight and Logistics Coordinator, which is now part of the CPR, which is statewide. Every district,
okay,
has this position. So welcome.
Great.
Welcome,
great,
Ryan.
Great. Welcome, Ryan.
And I'll take any questions you may have.
Any questions for Claudia? Seeing none. Thank you for your
thank
brevity.
You.
And we will move to the Executive Director's report.
I will also try to be quick. I also want to welcome the new members, as well as Commissioner Lane from Lake Helen. I also want to just take a moment to give some thanks to TPO leadership, Lee Matusik, Rob Gilliland, Nancy Long, Pat Northey, as we went through reapportionment. The leadership changed because that took a very long time, and I just want to thank you all for all your assistance, as well as the DOT with their guidance and the staff of the respective new partners who were very helpful in moving this along. I know I sound like I'm at the Emmys, right? I also want to let you know that in front of you is an auditor's letter. Each year we have a financial audit, and our auditors are required to let you know that that's happening. And so if you're into that kind of thing, please go ahead and read through that, and you'll find out what they're going to be doing. And then finally, next month, we are going to try, and at this point you'll probably appreciate me saying this, we're going to try to limit the length of the TPO meeting, and we're going to hold a long-range plan workshop. So we're going to try to, again, get through the meeting fairly quickly and then move into a workshop. I would appreciate you all leaving still some
Yeah, we really
time
need
your
attendance during that time. That's critical.
That's all I have.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll start with comments from board members. Mr. Patterson, we'll walk around that way. Anything you want to say?
Nope.
Okay.
No, you already told me to shut up.
I didn't tell you that.
But will you appreciate it?
I'm coming around. Barbara, Lita. Okay, seeing no comments, thank you very much. We will be in adjournment until September 24th, 2014. Thank you.